Hello, beautiful. So welcome to my podcast or my YouTube channel. I'm Will Caminada, the Multidimensional Guide, and I'm here to help you awaken, heal, and expand your consciousness. Today, I'm bringing a conversation episode, and I had the pleasure to talk to Holly Copeland. Holly is a former conservation scientist turned certified human potential coach and neuro meditation teacher, sound healer, and Reiki master. She's a practitioner and teacher of non-dual awareness and subtle energy meditation techniques, and uses neurotechnology, Reiki, and tuning forks in transformative quantum healing experiences in her coaching work. So in this conversation, Holly and I talked about combining ancient wisdom with modern science and modern technology. So this is something that Holly talks a lot about, this sort of union between the science and the spirituality. And during the interview, she also guided a meditation to rest the mind, to connect with the unconditional love that you are, which is something that she talks about, coming from the ordinary into the awakened mind. It was a wonderful conversation. I hope that you enjoy it. And if you do, please share this conversation with somebody that will benefit from it. Hit the like button, subscribe to my channel, and follow Holly. You'll find all the links in the description. Enjoy the show. Hi, Holly. Thank you so much for being here on the podcast.
Hi, Will. I'm so delighted to be here. Thanks so much for the invitation.
It's a pleasure. And I'm very excited. I'm also very curious to know more about your work and your journey. And one thing that really caught my attention about you and about your work is that you combine ancient wisdom with modern science. So I thought it would be a good place to start there. So if you could share with us a little background story of how you went from scientist to a holistic healer, or integrating both, right?
Yeah.
And maybe that is linked to your spiritual awakening journey at all.
Completely. Yeah, I would love to share that story. So I've always been, I would say, a spiritual seeker, even from an early age, 14, 15, you know, interested in meditation and all kinds of, you know, woo-woo things, I would say. But then when I went to college, I also got very, I have a just deep love of the earth and the environment, and felt super motivated to choose a career that was going to help the planet in some way. And that led me down a path where I ultimately got a job with the Nature Conservancy doing science work. I was specifically a mapping scientist, so into mapping technology like geographic information systems, and was my specialty. And I spent 25, almost 30 years, if you combine all of my work in that field, as a mapping conservation scientist, specifically, I was in Wyoming working for the chapter there, but that work took me all over the world. I did some work in Africa. I did work throughout the Western United States. I was on, yeah, all kinds of kind of projects connecting with people globally to work on conservation issues. And I guess I thought that that was my career, and that's what I would do, sort of quote unquote, for the rest of my life. But as I entered my mid 40s, late 40s, I feel as though I was getting into this state of a place of being burnt out, like waking up every morning, just feeling like it would never be enough. Like there would just never be enough time, money, or resources to save the planet. And my little part just didn't feel like enough. So there was this sort of despair that was setting in about how just reading every day, you know, all of the terrible things that we were doing to the planet. And that kind of came into my own crisis about, you know, what am I doing and should I be doing something else? And then that collided with, I got really sick. I got mold poisoning. And so I physically got very ill. And so the two were kind of happening at the same time. And it caused me to do like a big rethink. And specifically, I was like tired of my own mind and the kind of catastrophe in the head and feeling like there's just all these voices and narrators, and I don't know how to get out of that and how to feel healthy. And when I looked at my life, it felt like, especially as I got better from the mold poisoning and I was kind of on the path to healing that with help of incredible functional medicine doctors, it was not conventional at all. It was infrared saunas and all kind of supplements and all of that. But as I got on the healing path and started looking at it, it was like I had never really taken my own mind seriously and done the inner work to kind of figure out what's really going on in here and how do I reconcile that. And that took me on a path. January of 2019, I wrote on the top of my diary, my Rewire My Brain project, because I was really into kind of biohacking and listening to some of those people. And I started studying the brain and learning about brain waves and theta brain waves. And I started meditating and I guess because I'm a scientist and came from that perspective, I started using this device called the Muse to monitor my brainwaves while I was meditating. Got really interested in that. And as I started meditating and hooked up with meditation teachers and started taking courses, like it really did start to help. Like there were just less thoughts in my head and things started to clear. And I was like, oh my gosh, it just upended my world and changed my experience of being human in a very fundamental way when I could calm that inner narrator and, you know, feel clearer and happier and more well. And that worked so well that ultimately I felt motivated to change my entire career path to be doing that work, because it was what I realized was that the problem with the planet isn't, it's like trying to solve it from the save the planet side of saving the pieces of forest. I mean, it's good. Don't get me wrong. I hope that work continues, but it felt like it was my mission to help the people who are ailing, who are the source of the problem, because it's the people that really need to change in order to save the planet. You know, and I wanted to do that work of working on the people side. And so I ended up quitting my career as a scientist and took the brave leap to become, you know, for the first time in 25 years, not having a salary and being on my own and being a coach. And then I got really interested in sound and the power of sound and sound healing and breath work. And, you know, that's
so
where I am
say,
today.
You would say that this last part is the ancient healing part of combining both of them.
Exactly. So the kind of the technology, the understanding, the neuroscience of the brain is the science part of the work that I do. And I'm just so fascinated with the work that people have done to look, you know, to monitor the brain and monitor the heart, like heart math, and look at the physiological changes that happen when we meditate, when we go inside, when we really address the problem from the inside out, and the neuroscience that backs that up, and the technology that supports that, like devices like the Muse or Apollo Neuro, or my God, there's so many great devices that assist with that healing. And then the ancient wisdom, which is the, you know, the meditative arts, the sound healing, and all of those ancient technologies that you know, wisdom keepers have known for a long time, even astrology, which I've studied astrology too, to help people shift into you know, what I call just fundamental well-being, like that it feels okay to be in here and there isn't a fundamental problem with, you know, with us, with you, with, you know, the person, whoever's listening, like you are okay as you are. And that central message that each of us is okay as we are, and to learn to find that place, irrespective of what external circumstances are happening outside, fully well aware that people are in some horrific situations. And so to acknowledge that, and at the same time, to understand that well-being really begins in finding our own ground of being, where we are always whole and well and loved and okay.
Yeah.
And that inside out is what I really love to do and really love to help people find.
Yeah, beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing your story. And I'm just thinking it's like the perfect example of the age of Aquarius that we are in now, which is kind of bringing together the ancient wisdom and the technology. Because, you know, when you think of the indigenous tribes, for example, they were using sound healing and they were in touch with nature and the stars. And they didn't know, probably they didn't know anything about brain waves, right?
Right.
Or the devices that are available. But maybe for now, for this time, this is really the way to go for most of us, because we are always in touch with technology. And that can be a really good thing, like to step beyond from that ancient wisdom. It's just like, hey, there's more that we can explore from different angles as well, right?
Exactly. Absolutely. And I love that people are more, it seems that there is more and more appreciation of the ancient wisdom keepers, the tribes, you know, throughout, you know, South America and Africa and Australia, I mean, and really North America. I mean, just, you know, really appreciating the wisdom that all of these different tribes carried about how we, you know, how we are energetic beings, how we respond to frequency and vibration and sound, you know, and plant medicine. I'm also a plant practitioner of, you know, have plant medicine has played a key role in my healing, working with tribes from Colombia. And I just so deeply honor the wisdom that they have like held the flame for all of us, even though we have tried and we keep trying to like systematically, you know, wipe them out. And the fact, oh, it makes me want to cry. The fact that they're still here and vibrant and alive and sharing their wisdom is it's such a blessing, right?
Yeah. And I feel like we're going back to basics, like going back to the plants, going back to the sounds of nature, our own sound, going back to the breath, right? Like the breath is so powerful, and we're both breath work facilitators, and we can try to understand and rationalize everything and actually get data and all of the things that maybe people want to know, to have evidence or proof, which is very scientific background. You know that better than I do, which is important, I think. But that alone, without the actual experimentation and experience of the healing through the breath and through the sound, I think that's a really great marriage that people need today, right?
Yeah.
And the other thing, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say the other thing that you mentioned that I feel like it's also important to bring up is I feel like your work also revolves around the mind quite a lot, and sometimes we judge the mind, right? We go like the thinking mind, or you know, the monkey brain, or we kind of see it as the bad guy, but it's a really powerful tool, right? Because the mind or the mental body gets us to do things, to experience life in a more expanded way. So talk to us a little bit about your work around the mind. And you also mentioned that you tracked your brain waves for 6 months at some point. So I'd love for you to share your lessons from that.
Okay. Oh, those are two great things. So I will, I'll take the second question first, and then I'll address the mind. So I did, I tracked my brain waves with this Muse device and a program called Mind Monitor. I actually tracked them for a year and a half, but I wrote this article right after I'd done it for 6 months, to sharing some of my ahas from that process. And so every day when I meditated, I would put on this device and I would literally track my brain waves. And then, because I'm a computer programmer, I wrote a little program in this program called R to take all of my data and just, I wanted to know, like, what could I see changes in my brain over that 6 months? Could I actually, did I have, you know, scientific proof, you know, or what I would say data proof, you know, N equals one, granted, but could I actually see a measurable change in my brain waves? And what the lesson that I learned was, indeed, I could. I saw the overall amount of theta in my meditations increase. So my ability to tap into those theta is those calmer brain waves, the, you know, 6 to 8 hertz range, which is slower, and more alpha, which is where the alpha is kind of like the beautiful, clear, alert, resting state. So in meditation, those two, theta and alpha, are hallmarks. And the science has shown this. There have been many studies now on what happens to the brain when we meditate. And one of the big conclusions that has come after multiple, multiple studies, many, many, is that meditation in general increases our alpha and our theta brainwaves. So it's getting us out of that beta brainwave state of the busy mind, and it's bringing us into a state that's literally slowing the brain down into spaces that are more open and calmer. And I could see, and I, you know, showed in this article that I wrote, you can look at the graphs, how my alpha and theta increased throughout my brain over this 6 month period that I monitored it. And I just, and I felt it, right? Like, I felt better. My overall experience of being human again was like calmer, more alert, happier. So I could feel it, but then there's something about seeing it on a graph, you know, just seeing that line go up. And like, I watched, you know, over the months, how my alpha just slowly climbs up and my theta slowly climbs up. Like, you could really see it, and my beta goes down. It's like, that's really cool. So, you know, that's very motivating to meditation. So that's one key, I guess, insight, is it's really motivating to track your brain and to see results, to be able to match that with the experience. And it's very, I guess, what I, one central message is, it's really doable. Like, if you're tired, if you're listening to this and you're tired of feeling like there's this, you know, busy mind in your head all the time, like, you don't have to live that way. You know, through meditation, through these ancient wisdom practices, you can change your brain. You can change your experience, your day-to-day experience, into to have a state of living that is calmer. And it doesn't matter what's happening around you. Like, the world can be like doing its crazy stuff around me, but it doesn't shift my inner state. And I think that key message of that we don't have to define our inner state just because the world or the people around us are busy and crazy. You know, we can have an, we can be like the total port in the storm. you know, that we're just like here and open and okay. And I probably can't share that message enough, because I think people think that their experience is tied to the outside world, but it doesn't have to be.
Yeah. You talked a lot about the theta state. For anybody who's listening or watching, and they're probably wondering, how can I get into that state, or how can I get into that state more often? What would be your tips or your practical tools that you would recommend?
Yeah. So one is to start meditating. And if you aren't meditating now, or you find it difficult, and I definitely was a person who found meditation difficult. Like I hear you. It's not easy. And if you can, you know, if you have the means, I recommend, you know, trying the Muse headset. If you like technology, and not everybody does. So I work with clients who are like, yeah, that's really not for me. But if you're somebody who likes technology, it's a great tool. There's a link through my website, you get a little discount, and
I'll put the link in the description.
Yeah. So that's one recommendation. And otherwise, you know, to get a meditation teacher or get support, join a community. There's lots of different flavors of meditation, because so it can be kind of daunting to figure out where. Some helpful place to start. I have a channel on Insight Timer, the free meditation app, and you can start to listen to, you know, my meditations, or it's really easy to find many other teachers. I'm also affiliated with a group called Raising Our Vibration, and we do subtle energy meditation. So that's another pathway, and there's an app for that. That's a great place to start. So those are a few ideas on the meditation, you know, to just start to be able to go in and sit, but just acknowledge it's not easy, and to, you know, get support is, I guess, my main message, you know, in whatever way, you know, feels authentic to you, to the person listening. And then, you know, there are lots of other like supplements and tools, like L-theanine was one I experimented with a lot. 5-DHC. or there's supplements like alpha supplements, but you know, L-theanine is the compound in green tea. There's a reason why Japanese monks drink green tea, because it's very calming and it has L-theanine in it. So green tea, just drinking green tea, has been actually shown to help calm the mind. So, you know, thinking about your supplements and what your food is, you know, that's a whole nother topic, but super important. You know, what you put into your body, you know, we are vibrational beings, and food has energy, and has a vibration. So what you intake in your body will affect your experience in the world of being human. And there are ways to eat, you know, Ayurvedic is based all around this, how to eat for a more calm, clear mind, right? Mm-hmm. So that's something to pay attention to. Let me just pause and see if there's anything else I really feels important to say about that. Well, maybe we go from there into the first question, which was about awakening, and then just see where that goes. So you asked specifically about, I'm trying to remember the question, but specifically about opening and awakening and what that experience was for me. Is that right? Or was there some other way you wanted me to answer it?
Yeah, no, that's fine. Yeah. And I think you also talk about the awakened mind, right? The ordinary
yes,
awakened mind. And I think that's linked to your story that you shared.
It is. Yeah. Okay, great. That helps orient me. So one of the traditions that I practiced in my path that I was introduced to is Mahamudrin Dzogchen, which are two lines of Buddhism in the Tibetan traditions. And they're a little different from the kind of traditional Theravadan Buddhism from Thailand and those places, which, you know, you just focus on your breath. And I did this style of meditation for a while, this kind of, I'm just going to sit here and follow my breath. And there's a rich, you know, nothing wrong with that. There's a huge, rich history of those beautiful traditions, and they help countless millions upon millions of people. But I was introduced to this style of meditation, of awakening practices, and they're more direct than the kind of let's sit and follow our breath. And what they point to is an awakened mind, like this difference of an ordinary mind, of the ordinary way we experience the world versus awakened mind, and then teach you to train to live in like an awakened mind or awake awareness state. And these practices are based on the central understanding that our awareness, this knowing of our being, is, it's easier to point to than to explain conceptually, because it isn't really a thought. So maybe what I'll do is to just help, is to guide you and your listeners for just a few minutes into this awakened mind state, and then we can talk about it after that. How's that go? Okay. So just inviting everybody to notice, to just kind of rest your eyes, look out at an object. I'm looking at a lamp. And just notice the qualities of that object. So notice that it has edges and boundaries. So we're looking out at this object. And then shift your attention to the space between you and the object. So become more aware of the space than the object. And then bring your attention gently back, like turn your attention around into the mind. And here it might be helpful to just close your eyes and just become aware of this awareness, the very simple knowing that knows the object you are looking at. And just start to notice the qualities of this awareness. So unlike the object you were looking at, which has boundaries and edges, let's see if you can find an edge to awareness. And just let your mind actually expand. Like if it feels like it's in the center of your head, just let it expand out so you're aware of the space in the room that you're in. And then beyond that space in the room to the space outside. And then take it further so it feels like it's expanding out beyond your town, beyond your country, beyond the planet. So just, there's just space. And then notice that just like the object was arriving, was something you were aware of. Notice that sound is also arising in this awareness. So the sound of my voice. And then just like sound is arising in this awareness, just notice that, turn your attention to sensation in the body, like the feeling of air on your skin or the clothes on your skin. And then maybe you let a thought arise, like what you had for breakfast. And then maybe you allow a feeling to arise, like the love for a family member or a pet, So you feel the love arise. And so notice that all of these things that are arising in awareness are something you're aware of. So whether it was the object you looked at or the sounds coming from your ears, coming to your ears, or the sensations on your skin, or the thought, or the feeling, or if you were tasting and you had a piece of fruit in your mouth, all of this sensory activity is really one thing. It's all information arriving to awareness. It's all something you're aware of. And it passes, right? Notice that no thought you've ever had has stayed. So we may feel like our thoughts are nonstop, but notice that they don't stay. In fact, no experience you've ever had has stayed. And then notice that there's one thing, and it's not really a thing, but there's one continuous, stable ground here. This stable ground of awareness, that which knows all of your thoughts, feelings, sensations, sights. It is not coming and going. So it may feel like your thoughts, for example, are you, but how could they be you if they don't stay? Right? We aren't our thoughts. There's something that arises within us. But there's this knowing, limitless ground, this awareness that is the stable ground that you are. And notice that anything can come or go in this stable ground of you, and it's okay. That awareness itself does not have any judgments or criticisms about what's coming or going. So when you have a feeling like, I don't like this, it's arising in this awareness in you, which you yourself are actually okay with what's happening. And that is like the home that we're all the great wisdom traditions point back to, this one stable ground of being, the great I am that you are. That you really are, in which everything is arising. And so, if you can learn to see this, to see and feel and know this stable ground, then you always have a home. You always have a place to return to that's fundamentally okay. This is true peace. This is true calm, everlasting peace the peace that path this all understanding, right? And so just let yourself take a few breaths in this stable ground. And like the sky, just allow whatever clouds come up to pass through, right? The sky isn't having an argument with any of the clouds. They're just arising in the sky. And we can be like that. We are the sky, actually. And we can train to live from this state of open acceptance of what's happening, which really is unconditional love. Because the definition of unconditional love is the acceptance or allowance of whatever's here, loving your being as you are, loving others as they are, which is our natural state. It's all, every single person listening, your natural state is unconditional love of yourself and others and everything that's here. And so the practices that were so profound in my own shift was to see this and to learn to train to remain here, to remain open and accepting of what is. It's a kind of seeing that the universe is whole, that it's not a broken universe. We aren't broken. The world isn't broken. And when you can learn to live your life where you're not broken, then you have immense power to create and love and be with whatever wants to move through you, you know? And I think for each of us, it's different. And we're all here to sing our own unique song, our own symphony. We're each born very unique with our own, I think, yeah, symphony that we're playing. And the more that you can train to remain in this, come back to this ground of being, this place of unconditional love, the more you feel this symphony of life and then your unique contribution to it. Kind of an unfolding happens that's not difficult or hard. It just sort of tumbles out of you when you align with this kind of awakened mind and stepping out of the old ordinary mind. So yeah, that's a bit of a taste, Will.
Thank you.
But I do. How does, so maybe that's gives you and others a bit of a sense for what I mean by awakened mind and stepping out of ordinary mind. And I'd love to hear like how that landed for you and what your experience was.
That's beautiful. It's a treat for me, for everybody watching and listening. So thank you so much. And if anybody wants to type in the comments how the experience was, please do so. It's beautiful. And I was smiling inside, especially when you said you are unique tone in the symphony of life, which is something that I said this week. And it's actually a post that I prepared as well. This week, and I have a program called the Multidimensional Self. And by coincidence, this week we're in 7D, which is all about sound. And so this is one of the things that I emphasize, is that you are sound and you are a unique tone in the symphony of the universe. And I just thought it was so amazing that you said pretty much the exact same. Probably our guides were like in connection. I love that. I love it. And I think that's a good link as well, just for you to talk a little bit about sound. And yeah, be mindful of your time as well. But if you could just touch on your work with sound, because I know you do a lot of work with the tuning forks. And so if you could just share a little bit about that, that would be amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. I would love to. So my sound healing journey, I got introduced to Eileen McCusick and biofield tuning. And just for whatever reason, my guides just instantly gave me a yes on that. So I started studying with her. And in biofield tuning, you know, we work with the biofield, which is the auric field from the ancient wisdom traditions, except in scientific Western terms, it's called the biofield, but it's the energetic field around each one of us. And it's like we're walking with our minds outside of our bodies. So our emotions and thoughts originate actually as vibrations in the field, not like it, you know, feels like they come from somewhere in our bodies, right? But really, we have this field where our emotions and thought forms and mental body originates from. And in biofield tuning, we use tuning forks mostly in the field. I do some work on the body, but mostly I'm actually coming into people's biofield tuning. We come into the field and we, like an instrument, like an out of tune instrument on a, you know, guitar, you know, we bring the fork in and tune. It feels to me like I meet resistance in the field, which is like an out of tune string. And then the tuning fork has this conversation with it and it tunes it back up, and it helps release old stored stuck emotional patterns and traumas that people have, you know. And what happens, it's incredible. I do this work both in person and also distance. So I work with people all over the world, and it's incredible when I bring that fork into somebody's field. I would, to be honest, Will, I wouldn't believe this were true if it weren't, like, as a scientist, if I didn't have my own experience of it. But, you know, I can't tell you how many times I've had, you know, I'll feel kind of what happened to them. So I'll come into the field and, just the one example that's coming to mind right now is, like, I was working with a client. I came into a certain part of her field and my chin starts to ache, you know? And I'm like, I wonder what this is, you know? And I always just pause and I'm letting the fork clear it. And finally I said, you know, my chin's really aching. I'm curious, you know, did you get, you know, hit? Actually was, you know, trying to be sensitive and wasn't really sure. And this client didn't say very much at the time. But then after the session, when we did a debrief, she told me that she'd been hit by a giant rock at that age that I was at, you know, on her chin, like a brother had accidentally, you know, was throwing a rock and it accidentally hit her. And it was really traumatic. And so just to point out that, like, at a very physical level, things like being hit by a rock, you know, is stored as a vibration in the field and as like an out of tune string. And tuning forks have this incredible capacity to help release those stored traumas, and which are the source of, in our work, they're the source of all disease. All disease originates as a thought form in the field. You know, we have something is it's dissonant, it's contracted, it's not open and free. So healing is, you know, the free flow of energy through the body. And we contract when something traumatic happens and it's too much for us to deal with. And, you know, most everyone has something like that, that they were, you know, that happened when they were a child or whatever. And we just kind of store it. It waits there. It hangs out there as this dissonance or contraction in the field until we, you know, through various methods, tune it back up into the blueprint and what I call the blueprint song, you know, our original sort of symphony that we're here. So I feel like I'm just a tuning fork, you know, I'm like a kind of musician, working on people's fields to tune the instruments and help people release that. And I mean, people heal from pain and emotional pain and various kinds of conditions through this work. It's really incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're bringing harmony to people's
fields,
bodies and fields and the planet, right? Because circling back to what you said in the beginning, we are the cells of this earth, right? So if you want to save the earth, we look within and bring harmony within ourselves.
Exactly. It has to start with each of us first. Like you can't, I always tell people, like, put on your own oxygen mask first. You know, that's where you start. You don't start trying to, you know, save others. You try to, I think Rumi said, you know, when I was young, I tried to change the world. And as I matured, you know, I learned saving myself, you know, was the, I'm bastardizing that quote, but that's the essence, right? Mm-hmm. And now I am wise, so I'm changing myself. And, you know, and I think the getting back to the science part of this, when you look at like what HeartMath is doing, where they're monitoring coherence around the planet and showing that we're actually swimming in the sea of electromagnetic fields surrounding the planet, and each and every one of us is contributing to that field. So, you know, if you embody and harbor anger and hate about what's happening in the world, then you're sending anger and hate as a vibration out into the world and just contributing to the incoherence of the planet. You know, so the thing is that we have to, the invitation is to go in and actually release that anger, hate, judgment, whatever that, you know, whatever those emotions are that are bringing that up, so that we can, you know, help literally harmonize the planet from the inside out, from each of us inside out. And not to say that any of the great work that people are doing, you know, not to invalidate any of that. And there's some very immediate, you know, incredible, you know, work that people are doing, you know, on human rights and injustices. And so, you know, and I just want to speak to that. Like, this process for me is like being well inside so that I have empowered and I can meet and help with, you know, now rainforest conservation projects or elephant, you know, healing projects or, you know, whatever, you know, children abuse, you know, it's like we can all be those service workers to help that, but we need to be well ourselves inside. So it's like when we feel whole and not broken, we have infinite capacity to meet all of these, you know, great challenges and problems and serve them, but serve them not from a place of brokenheartedness, but serve them from a place of wholeness and love. And that, what I realize now looking back, is that I was trying to, quote unquote, save the planet from a place of brokenheartedness. Mm-hmm. And it was breaking me and it was killing me literally. And so it's the step out of brokenheartedness, the personal step out of brokenheartedness into wholeness, that is the invitation for each and every one of us to help solve all of these great, you know, problems we have on the planet.
Yeah, thank you. I loved what you said. Being service from a place of love is really crucial. And even if there is anger, let the anger be the catalyst and push you to doing good things, right? Because it can be helpful if you learn how to channel from that place of love, right?
It can be helpful, yes, but it's from a place of love. Then it becomes, to me, that kind of anger is like fierce love. You know, you're turning on this like deep, fierce love for the planet into whatever work you're doing.
Well, Holly, I want to acknowledge you for the work that you do in being the bridge between the science and the ancient wisdom, the mind and the spirit, the heart and the body. So thank you very much for your work, for your service, for your contribution to the healing of humanity and the planet Earth. Thank you for shining your light. Mm-hmm. And just to finish, let us know how people can connect with you or if they're interested in working with you.
Yeah, thank you. So my website's heartmindalchemy.com, and you can find out information about how to work with me or how to, you know, in various ways, whether it's one-on-one or I have master classes, and I'm just about to launch a membership community, and you'll be able to be on some sessions with me, sound healing and breathwork sessions a couple times a month. So, you know, and also the resources that I mentioned. So heartmindalchemy.com.
That's amazing. And as usual, I'll put the links in the description. If there's any link specifically that you want me to add, you just send me and I'll add it.
Okay. Awesome.
Thank you, Holly.
Thank you so much.
Much love.
Much love. Much love to you and all your audience and for everything you're doing as well, Will. I really, really appreciate it. You've got such a big heart and your energy, your shine radiates so beautifully out into the world. I deeply appreciate it.
Thank you so much. I receive it. Thank you. Yeah. Bye. Thanks for watching or listening to this episode. If you would like to learn more about Holly's work, visit her website, www.heartmindalchemy.com. Follow her on Instagram as well, Holly Erin Copland. You'll find the links in the description as usual. And once again, if this has brought you value, please subscribe to my podcast and share it with your friends. And let me know in the comments how this interview resonated with your heart. As always, keep shining your light, keep your heart open, and let love lead the way. I love you. See you in the next episode. Bye. Thank you.